98% pure potential. 98% pure potential. Chapter 1, The Context. Subtitled, Account Planning Nears 50. Pause for Thought. As account planning approaches its 50th year, it would be wise to take a breather, to consider where the role has got to. Middle age can leave you short of breath. It can trigger a midlife crisis. There is a moment where you notice that you have been doing the job longer than those who taught you how to do the job. In the case of one of the authors, he realized that he'd been doing the job longer than those who taught him could have been called account planners. Account planning is a craft which is passed on from the senior planners to the junior, as are most skills in advertising. And the name is still problematic, reflecting the high status of planning, aka town planning, corporate planning, scenario planning, in the energetic 1960s, when the past was being demolished and the future was being built. The 1970s oil shock brought that optimism to an abrupt end. So, where have we got to? Well, global domination, if job titles are anything to go by. There are planners in every advertising agency around the world, although some may have rebranded themselves as strategists. There are debates about whether strategy is different from planning and more high-end. Planners are no longer to be found only in ad agencies. They've also started popping up in almost every other kind of agency. Inevitably, their job description varies depending on what that agency does and how it earns its money. Agencies who publicly repudiated planning usually quietly reintroduced it sometime later, but that is probably because marketers expect a strategic contribution from their agency and like there to be an alternative point of view to that of the account handler who represents their interests and the creative who have work to sell. Nearly 50 years on, the account planning role is the most recent, substantial role to be introduced into agencies since visualizers, better known as art directors, were recruited to support copywriters and then partner with them in creative teams. Planning is an interesting role, since the function has to be charged directly these days by billing planners' hours to clients, and planners are not essential to the process of making communications. Someone is perfectly capable of collecting a brief from the client to create advertising and to present it back to them. There are craftspeople to make the work and to place it in the media. Recently, there has been some attempt to reposition planners as a subset among creative people who borrow, reappropriate, or possibly even create branded content. The strategist becomes an executioner. But the planner's output today is part social, part conceptual. Planners still don't make stuff. The mention of the brand word is also another cue, since the scope of brands today is truly vast. From packaging to relationships with producers, distributors, retailers, and of course customers, brands have sprawled in all directions. There is an army of caretakers who ensure that communications is kept on brand and fits with everything else. A generation ago, those policing the frontiers of brand identity were flippantly nicknamed logo cops. Today, with programs of social listening in place, what customers are saying and whether or not they actually name brands when they post on social media platforms has to be engaged with and incorporated into the marketing team's overall narrative. As advertising museums showing work from the 1950s could point at packaging, shelf labels, and of course advertisements, today that would be only a subset of the branded material in use today. So the work of agencies has become more cerebral, and there is a need to coordinate all this content. So more work for planners, some of whom have taken to call themselves brand planners. Then there is what has come to be known as big data. Organizations have found that the generation of data about products and customer behavior and usage has broken all boundaries. Most of the analytics deployed to make sense of this is automated. There is an emerging function of data scientists creating dashboards and monitoring data streams because there is far too much to be easily summarized. But a client has to be very bold before they turn their backs on the data tsunami, opting to concentrate on the core business. Who is to say that the next market leader doesn't leapfrog their way to the top because they have found an algorithm for reimagining the market in a totally different way? So, marketers hire more data analysts and grimly play the zero-sum game, just in case. Planners within agencies have a vested interest in looking at this data, even if their time and attention is limited. They likewise need to keep up with what the analysts are studying. That is hard to do, because the planning function has become stretched. Planners can work across numerous pieces of agency business. They may be the only planner in their agency, or the one assigned to work on a particular range of business, so rarely work with other planners. This casts them into the role of representing the strategic point of view. It may be difficult, if not impossible, to get a wider perspective. Even in agencies with a sizable department of planners, there can be little overlap, so others don't know what you are doing and are able to make little contribution to it, even when there is time to do so. So although most of the work is team-based, the planner is relatively isolated from their peer group. The proxy has often been professional bodies, like the account planning group. Planners have also been very communicative with each other online. It's an ideas business, and however proprietary the ideas in their clients' businesses, there seems nothing proprietary about planning ideas which circulate over and over. Then there is the nature of the planning task, which is expanded. Planning can take on everything from market analysis in a pitch situation, to market sizing and segmentation, to customer understanding, to customer journeys, to media touchpoints, and to managing experiential architecture. And let's not forget evaluation and return on investment. In reality, planners may only deal with a subset of these, but they are often expected to be able to contribute at all of those levels, even if they are not expected to deliver them. Where there is an anxiety about the number of hours to be used, the planner is nudged towards execution, demonstrating that they are able to support the rest of the team in delivering the volume of communications across the variety of platforms which the client now routinely expects. And as if all this weren't enough, campaigns solicit customer feedback, and commentary and criticism need to be counted and incorporated. Real time has become the way to operate. There are campaigns where the marketing team sets up a war room and buys space and repurposes content within hours, depending on what feedback has been received. There is a need to make active choices about what serves the needs of the brand best, where further investment needs to be made, or an unhelpful avenue discouraged. This requires thought, often with minimal time for reflection. So planners have found themselves on the front line, supporting tactical decision-making to such an extent that tactics can seem to be more productive than the original one or two strategic choices before the campaign was commissioned. We mentioned the relative isolation of the planner. That is only part of the story. Often, the planner finds themselves in competition with other planners from other agencies. If the client has put all of their work into a single agency, well and good. But more often than not, the client is using a range of different types of agency, each with their own planner, each of whom has a separate point of view. The planner in the ad agency at the top of the food chain can bang on the table and shout with the loudest voice, but not always. And on international campaigns, there may be planners whose expertise relates to geographical areas or particular segments of the business. So planners have to become adept around the strategy table as diplomats herding cats. Woe betide the planner who is caught representing the client's interest above that of their own agency. And this represents the last challenge, which is of being pushed towards a sales role where planners are under pressure as advocates of their own agency's output, working in their agency's interest, whether or not that work has been properly thought through or is likely to be effective. It is difficult, if not impossible, for planners to represent the agency's conscience in tension with the account handlers and creatives under these sorts of pressures. So has planning always been this way? Is this a sign of the adaptability and power of the function, that with the arrival of multiple channels, there is still a way of organising communications that is more than pragmatic and gives the agency involved and the client a strategic advantage? Or has the pressure on planning become so relentless that the job has become something else entirely, in which case planning would need to be radically reinvented or retired? The question, has planning always been this way, can be answered, but not for very much longer. the founders of planning, Stanley Pollard and Stephen King, died in 1979 and 2005 respectively. So we can't ask them. Those they hired as planners, for the most part, have left the advertising industry and gone on to do other things. Some are retired, but not all of them. So there is a shrinking window of opportunity to sit them down and to find out how they did the job, why they did the job, what would have happened if they hadn't been there to do the job they did. That's why we have written this book. Because that is what we have done. We have interviewed 10 planners from each of the agencies where account planning began, and spoken to interested and expert bystanders who worked in creative departments with the first planners, or as agency managers, as researchers, or indeed as clients. So we are in a unique position to be able to answer the question, was it always like this? No, it wasn't. Planners spent a lot of their time in their agencies, but they did different things. They worked on far fewer accounts for a start. The most we ever found at one time was 3. They found time to take long lunches, liquid lunches. Alcohol figured largely, and not just after hours. They worked more intensely because they were addressing a simple set of fundamental questions. And once those questions were answered, the job was basically done. It is hard today to grasp that the job was finite, because with the choice of hundreds of different channels, the work today is never done. Another difference is the relative lack of processes. It may surprise you, it certainly surprised us, but the creative brief didn't become standardized until nearly 10 years after planning had been started. That is hard to credit now that communications has become so process-driven, and now that productivity is defined by how much has been produced and how well it has performed. Productivity for the first planners was defined in terms of how good the advertising was, before it was made, before it left the agency. The work could be redone or reshaped many times, because if the work was right, then its efficacy would be such that making more variations of it would not lead to better results. And if the work was wrong, or only halfway there, then planners were encouraged to say so, sometimes to go back to the start, or at least to consider how the communication might be improved. Planning was just as cerebral as today, but the questions were simpler and related to the job that advertising had to do. Planners could be called the conscience of the agency because they could stand up to the others and were encouraged to. And they could stand up to clients as well. It sounds like a simpler world because it was. There were many fewer channels and many fewer planners. But that made the departments relatively more important, where planners talked to each other about what they were doing and compared notes. Paradoxically, planners didn't deal with less data. They dealt with a lot of data, but it came in reports and printouts. They didn't have desktop computers or calculators to analyze it. That had to be done by hand. So written reports and summaries of data reports were the norm. They had to be effective in communicating face to face and arguing their corner, as well as on the type page. That's right, no word processing. Every document handwritten, then typed by a departmental secretary. It took a couple of days for each meeting to be summarized in a contact report and the summaries circulated by post. They didn't talk about brands a lot, not to start off with. That was one of the great innovations of planning, that it shifted the focus from immediate results to the long-term effects of advertising, which were reckoned to be so powerful that they beggared the immediate short-term result. That was also a surprising finding. Since the received wisdom of the time was also short-term, sales often driven by long copy and direct response, the currency was the campaign, an idea which was refreshed periodically with new advertising but which evolved slowly, and which created long-term value. Some of the most well-known campaigns had been running for decades. No self-respecting junior product manager would have dared to throw the campaign out and start from scratch. So the discussion was about how to keep the story fresh and new, while keeping elements which were familiar and reinforced what people already believed about the product. Inevitably, in that environment, brands and advertising were treated as synonymous. Today, as branding sprawls in all directions, we make a clear separation between communications and brands. But the responsibility for keeping the brand on track made agencies and the planners in them responsible and reflective. They would often be drawn into deep discussion about the best next step, because the future of the whole business depended on it. That kind of decision-making couldn't and shouldn't be made overnight. And the case for change or staying the same needed to be supported with hard numeric evidence, but also with intuition. There is enough commonality between communications now and then to warrant our going back to see how the job was originally done. For several reasons. Yes, advertising was simpler, but it was on the whole better liked and remembered. This was actually measured on the Target Group Index, the BMRB survey that started in 1968, the same year that Boaz Messini-Pollitt and J. Walter Thompson employed planners. One attitudinal measure, the ads are as good as the programs, rose to a peak in 1991, but by 2004 it had halved. Advertising was at the centre of the culture to be discussed, mocked and vilified whether you were a customer or not. Captains of industry took an interest in the campaign their agencies were running. Often they made the decisions to run particular campaigns themselves rather than leaving it to the marketing manager or the brand manager. Some of the best advertising was enjoyed by the public for celebrating the British way of life in a way that is hard to imagine now. Planning had a lot to do with that, because striking the right note with customers meant getting close to them. And clients had to be convinced that advertising which wasn't overtly hard selling would actually deliver the numbers. It often fell to planners to make that case. And planners had to keep brands on track, because the values portrayed in the advertising mattered to customers whose identity was tied up with the way those brands performed. The 1960s and 1970s propelled British agencies to be a world force in advertising, widely admired and imitated. Account planning can take its share of credit for this, as it was exported everywhere else. In this book, we want to explore how account planning came about and to see it through the eyes of those who first did the job. You can still read the papers of Stephen King and Stanley Pollitt, but this book gives you a whole new group of practitioners to learn from.